awake.
But operations is different than, operation centers are different than actual...
On scene.
Yeah.
And I really can't comment on that because from the time I was up and out of bed, we were scrambling ourselves to get our response up and running. There was a period of about 8 hours when I was in the air. So what was actually transpiring at that point, I'm not really the spokesman. I think you need to have Alyeska.
Well, you were on the airplane.
Okay.
While you were in the air traveling, were you in phone contact with folks down here in Valdez?
We were in contact with, we were in intermittent contact. We have a cellular phone on the plane, but between Houston and Valdez, you lose contact a lot of the time. So I'd say about one-third of the time we were in phone contact, and we were communicating with the ship, and we were communicating with our Houston office. At that point, our concentration was to get as much information we can as what was happening on the ship, and to get as much information as we can and issue as many orders as we could back to Houston to get things going.
Initially called you, how serious did you think it was? What did they say? Did they say this is a nightmare? Did they say...
Well, I got a call from the president of Exxon Pipeline Company, who had gotten a call from Alyeska. I then called back to Anchorage and spoke to George Nelson. For the next hour or so, I was at home talking to both to Alyeska Anchorage and Alyeska Valdez, and to Exxon management people and to my staff. When I had made all the calls I possibly could, I moved myself into the office. I was there about 2.5 hours, went back home, packed a bag. I didn't pack enough, and I headed for the airport.
As a third mate, is Mr. Cousins qualified to take the bridge at some point during the...
Oh, yes, he is fully qualified to handle the vessel.
It's just this particular area he was not qualified, right?
This particular area, he is not... He does not have the pilotage qualification.
Where is Mr. Cousins and the helmsman now?
I don't know that. I think Cousins has been taken ashore. I don't know where the helmsman is.
How many people were on the bridge at the time? And can you tell us how many people were on the bridge at the time and what their duties were? For example, you mentioned the Doppler sonar, I believe you called it. Was there anybody specifically watching that?
There were four people who were involved in the incident, who were part of the navigation team, three people, the watch officer, the helmsman, and the lookout.
And what were each of their duties?
Well, the watch officer has total control of the navigation of the vessel. The helmsman is actually steering the vessel, and he's taking orders and directions from the watch officer. And the lookout on the bow is relaying information by walkie-talkie back to the bridge. And so he's in communication, and he's describing what he sees and hears visually.
And what he sees and hears, what's he looking at? I mean, does he have...
He's outside on the bow looking down.
With his eyes?
With his eyes and his ears.
So there wasn't anybody looking at the radar screen, at the sonar
screen? Oh, yeah,
the
mate is operating, the mate or the watch officer, whoever happens to be the master, by radar. There's two radars on the bridge.
Is he under suspension at this point?
No. No one is under suspension.
I have a question, sir.
Has anyone explained why the ship turned back across the reef?
I'm sure he was trying to get... At that point, he realized he was outside the traffic lane, and he was trying to get back there just as fast as he could.
So he didn't realize the reef was between him and the shipping lanes.
No, I'm sure he knew that... that he had danger lurking out there, and he was trying to get back to the shipping lane as fast as he can. I'm speculating.
I have a question.
If I can just stop a minute, some folks are in this response team are working with their heads, others with their hands and backs. I seem to be doing all the work with my voice, and I'm losing it. If any members of the media have those wonderful lozenges that cause old singers to sing like they were 20, I'd sure like to have a few of those. Yes, your question.
Yeah. About the graphic here with the icebergs, I appreciate the need for these graphics, but this is a really inaccurate graphic. I don't want to be doing a disservice to the news media, but if we didn't, these icebergs are much larger than what we saw when we flew out 10 a.m. the morning after, and we have video of that. There's very little ice that was in the channel itself. I'm a skipper of a boat. There were a few icebergs large enough that you wouldn't want to hit, but this is a really gross distortion of that situation there.
I understand from local people that that ice situation changes in a matter of hours. Clearly, the vessel coming out ahead of us requested permission to move to the eastern lane because there was ice clogging the outbound lane. That's just a matter of Coast Guard record. We came out about 3 hours later. You have to remember, this is at midnight. The picture that the mate or master has is primarily a radar visualization. He does not see these icebergs. He just knows from the radar that they're out there. So you know, he can't really tell how big they are, and he can't decide, I'm going to hit this one and miss that one.
Right. I would suggest that on your graphic that those look like they're a mile or two in diameter. I would suggest that that's very unlikely.
It probably could be. We just freehanded the thing. We're trying to describe. Maybe what we should have done was put a cross-hatched area.
Yeah, no, I understand that.
Okay, so I apologize for that.
Yeah. The other thing is, as I understand it, Coast Guard regulations at one point suggested that nighttime travel through ice was not to be allowed. I know that's obviously not the case now. Do you know if why that would have been changed?
I'm not aware of that at all.
The DEC says the NITS flyover this morning that there were skimmers out there, but they're not all operating and the booms are untended. Can you respond to that?
I don't know that. I don't know that. But my information is there's five out there operating. If there's six in different phases of being put in operation.
When you say different phases, like how soon can we expect any of those six to actually be out there?
I think the anticipation is they'll all be operational by the end of the day, 11. But I don't.
The dispersion test works. Are you going to spray the whole slick at this point, or?
No, there are certain areas that are clearly defined as sensitive, and there are certain areas primarily just in the center of Prince William Sound that are allowable for dispersion. I think they call them zone one areas, and I don't know exactly what it is. But there are defined areas close to, I don't know whether it's 1 mile or 2 miles from shore, but there are defined areas that we will not be dispersing. In those areas, we'll need to use continued mechanical cleanup, and also to see whether we have some opportunities to continue this burn technique.
Is the mechanical cleanup working at this point, given the length of time since the spill occurred?
The nature of mechanical cleanup is that it's very slow and very laborious. So we're not going to pick up thousands and thousands of barrels per day.
The dispersion test works and you send the dispersants on all the areas that you're allowed to and you get all the skimmers out there, how much of the total slick do you expect to recover optimistically?
We really don't have an assessment of that. We'll have to define if we get the go ahead to disperse. We'll have to define what part of the slick can be dispersed, and then we'll have to define the areas to concentrate the mechanical cleanup.
What do you have to define as
successful dispersion test when half of the oil in the area sprayed disappears, or all of it, or what's the standard for determining?
Well, in dispersement, if it works, it's going to be 100% effective.
So we only go ahead with disbursement if it's 100%, if the tests show that it's 100% effective?
No, I would say, you know, I think it's the kind of thing, if it works, it works. I really can't get too detailed, I don't know. But I think it's nature of thing that if the chemical dispersant interacts with the oil, it'll work. So anywhere you can hit it, the oil is dispersed.
20 to 30% effective. This was brought out at the oil spill conference, and also mechanical cleanup is probably another 10%, which means that we're going to have remaining in this area 60 to 70% of this spill. I just thought I'd point that out.
I really can't comment, Ricky.
Okay, well, maybe we should...
I'm not an oil spill expert. My first event in my lifetime.
I did have one more question about the ice. Surely this has come up before with ice across the tanker lanes. What has tankers done in the past to avoid ice?
Move to the easternmost edge of the lane and
come down.
But
they've stayed within the lane. So this is the first time that you know of that one has actually gone out of the lane.
That I know of, and certainly I don't believe that was their intention. What their intention was to move south to the eastern edge of the lane and then proceed southwesterly on a course of 220, which is the axis of the lane.
Can you slow down at all?
I don't really know, but you have to recognize that it takes a long time to get up to speed. So that there's a difference between the bell that is ordered and the vessel speed.
Can you show us on the chart at what point the course change was made to go back into the lane?
Well, I think it was exactly at the point where he was abeam of the buoy. Their intention was that at that point they would be approaching the eastern edge of the lane, and this is, I'm just speculating as best we can reconstruct it, and then they would have changed course to head down the easterly direction. I don't know the sequence.
Can't tell that.
Okay. What's the distance from the easternmost point of the lane to where the vessel is now?
1.1 miles.
1.1 miles.
I understand that you've had, as DEC would characterize them, some pretty blunt discussions with them. How would you characterize your conversations with DEC?
I have had no discussions with them.
Someone in your company has, though?
Possibly. I got 50 people here.
Huh.
Complaint by DEC or any other state agency about your cleanup efforts?
Not that I know of. I spoke this morning to Admiral Nelson and to Commander McCall, and they were very pleased with our activities.
Could you describe?
They're the freight.
Fourth to the co-chairman Ewing and McCall from DEC registering displeasure with the slowness of the response. It was to Alyeska.
I certainly wanted to know it directly. Their comments were that they felt that everything we could possibly be doing at this point is either in process or will shortly be in process. All of the logistics systems that have been set up, they are quite pleased with how rapidly we're moving people and equipment in.
I've seen that.
And that was their direct comment to me. So,
stockpiling cleanup equipment in key areas in the state after this?
One thing we do very well is conduct what I call autopsies, in which we go back over every single move, conditions as to why things happened, my anticipation is there'll be a lot of review and study of exactly this situation.
Well, I don't want just a review and study, but it's been a concern with environmentalists and fishermen for a long time that there is not the equipment for cleaning up the oil spill or for cleaning up oiled wildlife stockpiled in key areas of the state. And if this doesn't change the industry's mind, I don't know what will.
The display on the sonar on the bridge, what I've seen in small boats in the harbor, it looks like a video game display. You see a line come up and goes up and down, showing how the bottom is up close to the surface or below. Is it like that, or is it entirely different?
It's usually what they call a strip chart. Ed, do you remember what that actually looks like on a bridge?
Yeah, it's a strip chart of the liquid crystal displays you typically see on board the fishing boats.
Like I see in a video game?
It's purely black and white.
But you see a line.
You see a line that follows the bottom contour completely.
Fine. Yeah, are there toilet facilities on the bridge?
Yes. There's also coffee, soda.
Do you have any tape?
Usually about three or four different flavors.
What do you plan to do with your...
I have one open question.
I think I've heard two different numbers for the number of tanks ruptured. Is it 8 or 11?
Well, let's count them. There, down the center, there are 5 cargo tanks. All 5 are ruptured. Down the port side, there are 6 tanks. 4 of which are cargo tanks and 2 are ballast tanks. Of those, down the starboard side, Ed, I'm losing it here quickly. Down the starboard side, there are 6 tanks, 4 are cargo, 2 are ballast. We believe the forwardmost 5 of those 6 are ruptured. We believe the aft one is intact, but we're not positive. So what we have is 5 cargo tanks, the center tanks, and we have 3 cargo tanks on the starboard side and 2 ballast tanks on the starboard side. So they are 10 tanks in total and maybe 11, depending upon whether the aftermost starboard tank is holding.
What do you plan to do with your oil that you're covering?
We have 2 30,000-ton barges that are taking the recovered oil from the skimmers, and then they will go to an 80,000-ton tanker, which will collect it from the barges. I don't know. Would probably need to go back to a processing plant.
Starting analysis of environmental impacts. Are you looking at the impacts on the businesses that are not directly affected? In other words, the impact on processors and others?
This is a scientific analysis.
Will you be doing an analysis of the impact on the communities if the fishing is not opened?
Pardon?
If the herring season doesn't open or the herring can't be marketed...
I believe that would be part of the claims management activity, but I don't know that.
But is that going to be limited to just the fishermen, or is it going to include the processors, the cannery workers, the grocery store operators? All of them will be impacted also.
We said from the start that we take full responsibility for all of the expenses associated with the spill. I can't elaborate much
more.
Can
you elaborate further on what expenses associated with the spill is means?
And then I would like to halt it. Yes. Hopefully by midday, it may have already been made. I've lost touch with it.
The volume of the spill to date, then what is your estimate?
Still 240,000 barrels. I'd like to say thank you, and we'll be back at 5 o'clock or 6 o'clock? 5 o'clock?
6
o'clock.
Thank you all for coming, and I would like to also announce at 8 o'clock tomorrow morning, Dr. Ricky Ott will be doing a background presentation of the effects of oil on the marine environment and on liability. Here at 8 o'clock, this
is going to be a commercial fisherman press conference in which I'll be covering what Nancy said and also other commercial. It's going to be a commercial fisherman press conference. There'll be pamphlets available for background material by the press conference tonight that will be up on the front table for the press to read. 8 o'clock tomorrow morning here.
Nancy, my name is Jim.
This is Dave Hammack at the Valdez Civic Center. There's another announcement being made about possibilities for flyovers for press members. The press conference, President of Exxon Shipping, Jack Irasi, has completed his remarks after losing his voice as well, and has concluded the conference. It's scheduled to begin again at 6 p.m. Or another conference, I should say. It would pick up at 6 p.m. Some
we got some new information at this press conference. First of all, there are a series of charts that are quite detailed showing the extent of the holes that are damaged. All five of the centerline cargo tanks, the largest of the cargo tanks on the vessel, have been holed. All five of the centerline tanks are holed. The port side of the vessel is undamaged. The starboard side, which has both ballast and cargo tanks, has at least three cargo tanks ruptured and two ballast tanks ruptured. And there are an additional fourth starboard cargo tank that may or may not be damaged. The captain of the vessel, Captain Joseph Hazelwood, a 20-year veteran of Exxon Shipping and a 12-year master, was not on the bridge of the Exxon Valdez at the time of the first contact. We don't know yet whether he was on the bridge when the ship actually ran aground. There were two distinct incidents. The right side of the vessel raked along a pinnacle, and 2 miles later the vessel came to rest on a second pinnacle. The captain was clearly not on the bridge at the first incident, but was in his cabin one deck below the bridge of the Exxon Valdez. Now, the information brought out today is that the captain of the vessel, the master, Joseph Hazelwood, was the only man on the vessel, evidently, who was licensed to operate the vessel within the waters of Prince William Sound. The pilot taken on board to get the vessel through Valdez Narrows had departed the ship, and under Coast Guard regulations and Exxon Shipping Company policies, the captain should have been on the bridge. The third mate, Greg Cousins, we got his name for the first time today, was in command of the vessel as officer of the deck. He is not licensed to pilot vessels in Prince William Sound. That first admission today by Exxon that the captain, who was responsible for the vessel and also was the only man on the vessel licensed to operate within the sound, was not on the bridge. Cleanup work continues. Exxon is hoping that the disbursement efforts will be successful and will be able to have a significant impact on the size of the slick. But most of the press conference today was taken up with discussions of the specific damage to the vessel and the fact that there were two separate strikes against the pinnacles or reefs in the bottom of Prince William Sound, and then the admission about the captain not being on the bridge at the time. One element that was missing, and Exxon will try to produce that, is a time plot. They have a plot, a graphic here at the Civic Center in the press room, that shows the position of the vessel near as they can reconstruct it, the position of the vessel along its track to its final resting place. However, there is not a clear time plot attached to that map. Exxon is going to try to create that later today. NOAA, the National Oceanic Administration, is planning a press conference. We hope at that time to begin to have some information on specific marine impact, environmental impact. To this point, it's all speculation. Questions addressed to the Coast Guard or to Exxon have been bucked to NOAA. There are a plethora of agencies gathering, ADF&G, the National Marine Fisheries Service, the Alaska Department of Fish and Game, Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation, the Department of the Interior, and NOAA are all involved. NOAA is planning a press conference today. We're not sure of the time right now when it is happening. We will attempt to broadcast that for you live. Tomorrow morning, it has been announced that the commercial fishermen, led by CDFU and the United Fishermen of Alaska, and with their spokesperson, Dr. Ricky Ott, they're having a fisherman's press conference tomorrow morning, Monday morning at 8 a.m. And I suspect that there will be a series of challenges to some of Exxon's assumptions, and certainly there will be some strong statements regarding the fishermen's perception and perspective on the need for a long-term look at the impact on the various fish stock cycles, life cycles. The point was made at a conference last night that if you destroy 1 year of a five-year salmon cycle, 5 years from now and 5 years after that, the impacts will still be felt. Well, that has been the press conference. Again, we're anticipating more news from NOAA this afternoon, and there is another conference scheduled by Exxon for 6 p.m. this evening. We're also anticipating a Coast Guard status report at about 4:30 this afternoon. Any of those events that occur here at the Civic Center Ballroom, we'll attempt to broadcast live, and any other events that occur, we will try to at least get a report on the air as quickly as possible. This is KCHU Radio. I'm Dave Hammack at the Valdez Civic Center. Back to the station.
Thank you, Dave. Time is 21 minutes after 12 o'clock. We'll be back in just a moment with Weather Watch.
This is Andre Previn, your host for the weekly radio series High Performance. I've always enjoyed a wide variety of music in my own life, and High Performance reflects my fascination with the connections and contrasts between different kinds of musical expression. Each program is an artistic journey filled with lively performances and comments by some of the world's finest classical and jazz musicians. I hope you'll be listening for the next High Performance.
And that comes your way every Friday morning at 11 o'clock right here on KCHU.
It's time for Weather Watch, a comprehensive review of current weather conditions and forecast for the next day or two. The conditions look pretty good right now, a little wind threatening and some small craft advisories out in Prince William Sound coming up for this evening. Valdez and vicinity forecast is calling for sunny skies this afternoon with a high temperature in the mid-40s, winds increasing to northeast to 15 miles per hour this evening. Paired tonight with northeast winds to 15 to 20 miles per hour and a low near 30 degrees. Mostly cloudy tomorrow with a chance of snow showers in the morning and a high temperature in the upper 30s, northeast winds to 15 miles per hour and gusty. For Cordova and vicinity, sunny this afternoon with a high temperature of 47 degrees and light wind. Fair tonight with increasing clouds toward morning with low around 28 degrees and light winds, and partly cloudy tomorrow with a chance of snow showers, high temperatures in the mid-30s. For Glen Ellen vicinity, partly sunny this afternoon with a high around 25 degrees and light wind. Fair tonight with a low temperature of 5 to 10 degrees and light wind, and sunny tomorrow with a high in the low 20s. The marine forecast for the North Gulf Coast waters was issued at 3 a.m. this morning. It's valid till 5 a.m. tomorrow with an outlook to 5 a.m. on Tuesday. In the synopsis, a large low center 600 miles southwest of Yakutat will move to 420 miles southeast of Yakutat by tomorrow morning. High pressure over northwest Canada will continue moving slowly southeastward. A low 150 miles east of the Pribilof Islands will move to 250 miles northwest of the Pribilofs by early tomorrow morning. The marine forecast for Cape Fairweather to Cape Suckling has a small craft advisory calling for winds becoming northeast and increasing to 25 knots today. Stronger winds to 40 knots out of eastern bays and passes beginning this afternoon. Seas building to 10 feet by this evening. The outlook is for northeast winds to 20 knots. For Cape Suckling to Gore Point, a small craft advisory calling for winds becoming northeast and increasing to 25 knots today. Seas building to 10 feet by this evening. The outlook is for north winds to 20 knots. For Prince William Sound, winds becoming northeast and increasing to 20 knots today. Stronger winds to 30 knots out of eastern bays and passes beginning this afternoon. Seas building to 6 feet by this evening. The outlook is for northeast winds to 15 knots. For Valdez Narrows and Valdez Arm, a small craft advisory calling for northeast winds to 15 knots, increasing to 25 knots tonight. Higher gusts to 35 knots in the arm tonight. Seas to 3 feet, building to 5 feet in the arm tonight. The outlook is for northeast winds to 25 knots and gusty. And finally for Port Valdez, variable winds to 10 knots, increasing to east to 20 knots with higher gusts tonight. Seas to 2 feet, building to 4 feet tonight. The outlook is for northeast winds to 20 knots and gusting. The next regularly scheduled marine forecast will be issued at 3 p.m. You can hear that on Weather Watch at 6 p.m. this evening. Motoring forecast for southern Alaska highways from Valdez all the way to Anchorage. Calling for sunny today and clear skies tonight with northeast winds to 20 miles per hour over the Richardson Highway. Highs in the upper 30s except lower 30s in the Copper River Basin. Low temperatures tonight in the teens to near 10 degrees. And on the Richardson Highway, Glen Ellen to Fairbanks, sunny today with northeast winds 10 to 25 miles per hour, high temperatures 15 to 30 degrees, with clear and continued windy in the forecast for this evening. Some temperatures around the state as of 11 a.m., Prudhoe Bay reporting minus 8 degrees and blowing snow today. Anchorage with 36 degrees and partly cloudy, Glen Ellen 21 degrees and mostly cloudy. And in southeast Alaska, 37 degrees and cloudy in Juneau today. Around Prince William Sound, Whittier enjoying a balmy 40 degrees and partly cloudy. Cordova with 41 degrees and clear. And here in Valdez, 42 degrees and clear skies. Sunrise was at 6:28 a.m. this morning, sunset coming up at 7:15 p.m. That's a gain of 6 minutes of daylight, giving us a total of 12 hours and 47 minutes total daylight for today. High tide coming up at 3:49 p.m. this afternoon. That'll be at 9.5 feet. Low tide at 9:26 p.m. tonight at 3.1 feet. And the next high tide will be at 3:26 a.m. at 11.8 feet. That's Weather Watch for this little past Sunday noon. Be sure and stay tuned at 3 p.m. and we'll have an update on the current weather conditions and forecast for tonight and tomorrow. Weather becoming increasingly...
All five are Russian. Down the port side, there are six tanks. Four of which are cargo tanks and two are ballast tanks. Of those, down the starboard side, Ed, I'm losing it here quickly. Down the starboard side, there are six tanks, four are cargo, two are ballast. We believe the forwardmost five of those six are ruptured. We believe the after one is intact, but we're not positive. So what we have is five cargo tanks, the center tanks, and we have three cargo tanks on the starboard side and two ballast tanks on the starboard side. So they are 10 tanks in total and maybe 11, depending upon whether the aftermost starboard tank is holding.
What do you plan to do with the oil when you recover?
We have two 30,000-ton barges that are taking the recovered oil from the skimmers, and then they will go to an 80,000-ton tanker, which will collect it from the barges.
And then
I don't know. Probably needs to go back to a processing plant.
You mentioned starting analysis of environmental impacts. Are you looking at the impacts on the businesses that are not directly affected? In other words, the impact
this is a scientific this is a scientific analysis.
Will you be doing an analysis of the impact on the communities if the fishing is not opened? If the herring season doesn't open or the herring can't be marketed?
I believe that would be part of the claims management activity, but I don't know that.
But is that going to be limited to just the fishermen, or is it going to include the processors, the cannery workers, the grocery store operators?
We said from the start that we take full responsibility for all of the expenses associated with the spill. I can't elaborate much more.
Can you elaborate further on what expenses associated with the spill means?
Then I would like to halt it. Yes. Hopefully by midday, it may have already been made. I've lost touch with it.
The volume of the spill to date, and what is your estimate?
Still $240,000. I'd like to say thank you, and we'll be back at 5 o'clock or 6 o'clock? 5 o'clock?
6 o'clock.
6 o'clock.
The state's office is coming, and I would like to also announce it's 8 o'clock tomorrow morning. Dr. Ricky Ott will be doing a background presentation of the effects of oil on the marine environment and on liability. Here at 8 o'clock, it's going to be a commercial fisherman press conference in which I'll be covering what Nancy said and also other commercial. It's going to be a commercial fisherman press conference. There'll be pamphlets available for background material by the press conference tonight that will be up on the front table for the press to read. 8 o'clock tomorrow morning here.
My name is Jim.
This is Dave Hammack at the Valdez Civic Center. There's another announcement being made about possibilities for flyovers for press members. The press conference, president of Exxon Shipping, Jack Irasi, has completed his remarks. after losing his voice as well, and has concluded the conference. It's scheduled to begin again at 6 p.m. Another conference, I should say, would pick up at 6 p.m. We got some new information at this press conference. First of all, there are a series of charts that are quite detailed, showing the extent of the holes that are damaged. All five of the centerline cargo tanks, the largest of the cargo tanks on the vessel, have been holed. All five of the centerline tanks are holed. The port side of the vessel is undamaged. The starboard side, which has both ballast and cargo tanks, has at least three cargo tanks ruptured and two ballast tanks ruptured. And there are an additional fourth starboard cargo tank that may or may not be damaged. The captain of the vessel, Captain Joseph Hazelwood, a 20-year veteran of Exxon shipping and a 12-year master, was not on the bridge of the Exxon Valdez at the time of the first contact. We don't know yet whether he was on the bridge when the ship actually ran aground. There were two distinct incidents. The right side of the vessel raked along a pinnacle, and 2 miles later the vessel came to rest on a second pinnacle. The captain was clearly not on the bridge at the first incident, but was in his cabin one deck below the bridge of the Exxon Valdez. Now, the information brought out today is that the captain of the vessel, the master, Joseph Hazelwood, was the only man on the vessel, evidently, who was licensed to operate the vessel within the waters of Prince William Sound. The pilot taken on board to get the vessel through Valdez Narrows had departed the ship, and under Coast Guard regulations and Exxon Shipping Company policies, the captain should have been on the bridge. The third mate, Greg Cousins, we got his name for the first time today, was in command of the vessel as officer of the deck. He is not licensed to pilot vessels in Prince William Sound. That first admission today by Exxon that the captain, who was responsible for the vessel and also was the only man on the vessel licensed to operate within the sound, was not on the bridge. Cleanup work continues. Exxon is hoping that the disbursement efforts will be successful and will be able to have a significant impact on the size of the slick. But most of the press conference today was taken up with discussions of the specific damage to the vessel and the fact that there were two separate strikes against the pinnacles or reefs in the bottom of Prince William Sound, and then the admission about the captain not being on the bridge at the time. One element that was missing, and Exxon will try to produce that, is a time plot. They have a plot, a graphic here at the Civic Center in the press room that shows the position of the vessel near as they can reconstruct it, the position of the vessel along its track to its final resting place. However, there is not a clear time plot attached to that map. Exxon is going to try to create that later today. NOAA, the National Oceanic Administration, is planning a press conference. We hope at that time to begin to have some information on specific marine impact, environmental impact. To this point, it's all speculation. Questions addressed to the Coast Guard or to Exxon have been bucked to NOAA. There are a plethora of agencies gathering, ADF&G, the National Marine Fisheries Service, the Alaska Department of Fish and Game, Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation, the Department of the Interior, and NOAA are all involved. NOAA is planning a press conference today. We're not sure of the time right now when it is happening. We will attempt to broadcast that for you live. Tomorrow morning, it has been announced that the commercial fishermen led by CDFU and the United Fishermen of Alaska, and with their spokesperson, Dr. Ricky Ott, are having a fishermen's press conference tomorrow morning, Monday morning at 8 a.m. And I suspect that there will be a series of challenges to some of Exxon's assumptions, and certainly there will be some strong statements regarding the fishermen's perception and perspective on the need for a long-term look at the impact on the various fish stock cycles, life cycles. The point was made at a conference last night that if you destroy 1 year of a five-year salmon cycle, 5 years from now and 5 years after that, the impacts will still be felt. Well, that has been the press conference. Again, we're anticipating more news from NOAA this afternoon, and there is another conference scheduled by Exxon for 6 p.m. this evening. We're also anticipating a Coast Guard status report at about 4:30 this afternoon. Any of those events that occur here at the Civic Center Ballroom, we'll attempt to broadcast live, and any other events that occur, we will try to at least get a report on the air as quickly as possible. This is KCHU Radio. I'm Dave Hammack at the Valdez Civic Center. Back to the station.
Thank you, Dave. The time is 21 minutes after 12 o'clock. We'll be back in just a moment with Weather Watch.
This is Andre Previn, your host for the weekly radio series High Performance. I've always enjoyed a wide variety of music in my own life, and High Performance reflects my fascination with the connections and contrasts between different kinds of musical expression. Each program is an artistic journey filled with lively performances and comments by some of the world's finest classical and jazz musicians. I hope you'll be listening for the next High Performance.
And that comes your way every Friday morning at 11 o'clock right here on KCHU.
It's time for Weather Watch, a comprehensive review of current weather conditions and forecast for the next day or two. The conditions look pretty good right now, a little wind threatening and some small craft advisories out in Prince William Sound coming up for this evening. Valdez and vicinity forecast is calling for sunny skies this afternoon with a high temperature in the mid-40s, winds increasing to northeast to 15 miles per hour this evening. Fair tonight with northeast winds to 15 to 20 miles per hour and a low near 30 degrees. Mostly cloudy tomorrow with a chance of snow showers in the morning and a high temperature in the upper 30s. Northeast winds to 15 miles per hour and gusty. For Cordova and vicinity, sunny this afternoon with a high temperature of 47 degrees and light wind. Fair tonight with increasing clouds toward morning with low around 28 degrees and light winds. And partly cloudy tomorrow with a chance of snow showers, high temperatures in the mid-30s. For Glen Ellyn vicinity, partly sunny this afternoon with a high around 25 degrees and light wind. Fair tonight with a low temperature 5 to 10 degrees and light wind. And sunny tomorrow with a high in the low 20s. The marine forecast for the North Gulf Coast waters was issued at 3 a.m. this morning. It's valid till 5 a.m. tomorrow with an outlook to 5 a.m. on Tuesday. In the synopsis, a large low center 600 miles southwest of Yakutat will move to 420 miles southeast of Yakutat by tomorrow morning. High pressure over northwest Canada will continue moving slowly southeastward. A low 150 miles east of the Pribilof Islands will move to 250 miles northwest of the Pribilofs by early tomorrow morning. The marine forecast for Cape Fairweather to Cape Suckling has a small craft advisory calling for winds becoming northeast and increasing to 25 knots today. Stronger winds to 40 knots out of eastern bays and passes beginning this afternoon. Seas building to 10 feet by this evening. The outlook is for northeast winds to 20 knots. For Cape Suckling to Gore Point, a small craft advisory calling for winds becoming northeast and increasing to 25 knots today. Seas building to 10 feet by this evening. The outlook is for north winds to 20 knots. For Prince William Sound, winds becoming northeast and increasing to 20 knots today. Stronger winds to 30 knots out of eastern bays and passes beginning this afternoon. Seas building to 6 feet by this evening. The outlook is for northeast winds to 15 knots. For Valdez Narrows and Valdez Arm, a small craft advisory calling for northeast winds to 15 knots, increasing to 25 knots tonight. Higher gusts to 35 knots in the arm tonight. Seas to 3 feet, building to 5 feet in the arm tonight. The outlook is for northeast winds to 25 knots and gusty. And finally, for Port Valdez, variable winds to 10 knots, increasing to east to 20 knots with higher gusts tonight. Seas to 2 feet, building to 4 feet tonight. The outlook is for northeast winds to 20 knots and gusting. The next regularly scheduled marine forecast will be issued at 3 p.m. You can hear that on Weather Watch at 6 p.m. this evening. The motoring forecast for southern Alaska highways from Valdez all the way to Anchorage. Calling for sunny today and clear skies tonight with northeast winds to 20 miles per hour over the Richardson Highway. Highs in the upper 30s except the lower 30s in the Copper River Basin. Low temperatures tonight in the teens to near 10 degrees. And on the Richardson Highway, Glen Ellyn to Fairbanks, sunny today with northeast winds 10 to 25 miles per hour. High temperatures 15 to 30 degrees with clear and continued windy in the forecast for this evening. Some temperatures around the state as of 11 a.m. Prudhoe Bay reporting minus 8 degrees and blowing snow today. Anchorage with 36 degrees and partly cloudy. Glen Ellen, 21 degrees and mostly cloudy. And in southeast Alaska, 37 degrees and cloudy in Juneau today. Around Prince William Sound, Whittier enjoying a balmy 40 degrees and partly cloudy. Cordova with 41 degrees and clear. And here in Valdez, 42 degrees and clear skies. Sunrise was at 6:28 a.m. this morning. Sunset coming up at 7:15 p.m. That's a gain of 6 minutes of daylight, giving us a total of 12 hours and 47 minutes total daylight for today. High tide coming up at 3:49 p.m. this afternoon. That'll be at 9.5 feet. Low tide at 9:26 p.m. tonight at 3.1 feet. And the next high tide will be at 3:26 a.m. at 11.8 feet. That's Weather Watch for this little past Sunday noon. Be sure and stay tuned at 3 p.m. and we'll have an update on the current weather conditions and forecast for tonight and tomorrow. Weather becoming increasingly important as we deal with events out on Prince William Sound. Coming up next, rather than diving into Mary McPartland's piano jazz, we have a special of big band music to carry us on into the afternoon.
You know, one of the questions you hear a lot these days in the music business is, will the big bands ever come back? Well, it's a funny thing to be asking, really, because in one major sense, they never went away. Sure, there was a time, a magical few years, nearly half a century ago, when 13 to 15 piece dance bands were the pivot and the centerpiece for American popular music. That was wonderful.